question. And this is, I hesitate to teach this for two reasons. One, I'm not sure I'm qualified to teach it. Second, this is so very far from, this is going to, some of you aren't even married yet. Most of you are not married yet. And it's going to be a long time before your children, before you would have this job. I'm going to go ahead and teach it for two reasons. First of all, you have the syllabus. You can refer to it later. Second, you need time to think about it. And third, I think some of the things I'm going to say may help you if you work with young people in the church. Yeah, some of a fringe benefit. First of all, who gives sex education in the home? Now, there's a great controversy going on, which I'm not going to get into, of sex education in the schools. Regardless of that, regardless of what does or does not happen to public schools, sex education needs to be done in the home. First of all, so about who, that which daughters need to learn from their mother. Certain things daughters need to learn from the mother, ideally. Puberty and the psychological changes that accompany the physical changes, that can best come from a mother. And most mothers do a pretty good job of it. Secondly, a healthy attitude toward males. This is very important. The attitude that your daughters have toward their husbands when they get married will largely depend upon you. A lot of women are very silly. They will create negative attitudes toward men and their daughters, and then end up raising their own grandchildren. You want to raise your own grandchildren, you make your daughter into a man here. Call a misanthrope. And a lot of girls are raised to be man haters. A lot. They need to learn about how to deal with boys. Boys who are over aggressive and boys who are shy, under aggressive. That's such a funny. How to encourage a boy shy, that is to talk with you and boy. Not be so shy. That which girls need to learn from their father. Male versus female sexual response. That is, they need to know that boys turn on quicker than girls. It's very hard for girls to understand that. And I think they'll tune into it more if it comes from their father. For instance, I'll give you an example. I need to tell your daughter, that's one of my daughters, that they can, that when you put your hand on his knee, it turns him on about twice as fast as if he puts his hand on yours. It turns you both on, but he turns on quicker. What do you tell girls and boys, or girls, some of girls now, when they start to date that nice boy? I believe this. I believe in giving straight information and make it practical. I taught my girls and boys, I said, look, God made you in a certain way, and we are Christians at our house, but you go to a drive-in and make out for a couple, 3 hours, and pretty soon you cross the line where you leave the spirit behind and it becomes pure chemistry. God made us that way. I call it the gland line. You understand? Pretty soon it quits being a matter of the heart and the spirit. It's a matter of drive. I never let our kids go to drive-in theaters. That's just asking for trouble. Teacher, you don't go out and park. You don't go to drive-in theaters. And you don't go make wine. You're asking for trouble. Why ask for trouble? And when the rule is, you stay on, and you get to his gland line before you get to yours. Other girls that. So my daughter's that. You get to his gland line before you get to yours. So the rule is, you stay on this side of his gland. Watch where you put your hands. Don't let him put his hands in certain areas. You just play it smart. I recall our LeAngela, oldest daughter, her first boyfriend, was a nice kid. And he was in the church. Nice boy. And they pull up, and she was 15, and he was 16. He had a car, and he got him. And they pull up in front of the house, and usually they'd sit out there for 10 or 15 minutes, you know, just not to make a father nervous. And then she'd come in. Well, this night, one night I was sitting there reading, and they drove up, and this is my first teenage year, too, so I'm learning all this. I got to be a veteran, but and she just came in a couple of minutes. She was in the house, and I said, "Brother Andrew, did you get a fight?" And the boy's name was Rick. He never was speaking here. And I thought Rick. I said, "You and Rick have a fight?" She said, "No." I said, "Well, what happened?" He said, "She said he pushed me out of the car and said, Glenn." What had happened was that she had told him what I told her. Which I didn't tell her to. But that's pretty smart. Here you had a couple of nice Christian kids playing it smart, but they had to have the information to play it smart with. That's who? She said, "We're going to stay on this side of your lane." And they talked about it. But a boy, they need to know that. And I think it comes, if a father tells his daughters that, they'll tune him in, because girls have a hard time understanding that. Girls have to learn from their father the role of dress in attracting males. That is, what goes on in the boy's mind largely depends a great deal on what you wear and how you wear it. In many cases, what you don't wear. And girls have a hard time tuning into this. Girls don't listen very well sometimes. But no matter where the human information comes from. How to protect yourself in certain situations. You get in a situation where a guy's gonna take it no matter what are you gonna do? Well, teach him what to do, where to hit. I'm not kidding. One of the most common phenomena, especially in the college world, is called the date rape. You're familiar with that, aren't you? Yeah. And just because a boy is in Bible college, that's no guarantee whatever. Sometimes they're the worst. Girls need to learn from their father the lines that aggressive boys hand out. I put the lines in the syllabus, in case you need to know what they are. Here are the lines. What are you afraid of? It's part of growing up. If you love me, you'll prove it. That's the old one. That's the way people have always expressed their true feelings. Or it's painful for a guy to be in this condition and not get relieved. You got me all heated up. If you're any kind of woman, you'll take care of me. That's a redneck line. Here's one of my favorites. It'll be good for your complexion. That's a beauty. You're the most exciting girl I've ever met. I've never wanted anyone the way I want you. Here's a good one. This is the military one. Life is so uncertain. Who knows if we'll be alive even tomorrow? Wouldn't it be awful if you die in an accident before you experience the greatest thrill of all? Or you're uptight. Sex is a great tension breaker. It'll relax you. I want to marry you someday. We should find out if we're compatible. That's an old one. I've heard rumors that you're a lesbian. I'm not making this up. These are lies. I promise we won't go all the way unless you want to. Oh, yeah? Well, here's the good. You have nothing to worry about. I'm sterile. I swear I'll never tell anybody. It'll be our secret. Until 3 o'clock tomorrow, when the whole track team, the whole football team, knows about it. It isn't sex I'm after. I love you. If you get pregnant, I'll marry you. Or you have the body of a woman Mother Nature meant for you to have sex. And so, and see, if they get that from their fathers, then when they hear it from the boy, it sounds different. If they get it. That which boys need to learn from their mother. Boys need to learn what a girl finds attractive in a boy. Boys need to learn from their mother that girls like a boy who's gentle, kind, soft-spoken sometimes. How to build an honest relationship with a girl. I tell you, smart mother that teaches her boys about girls. Boys think they know, they don't know. How, and this would not have been in the syllabus 20 years ago. It's in this one. A boy needs to learn from his mother how to avoid trouble from aggressive girls. It used to be just the boys would come on. Now the girls come on. And if you don't think that's true, you just don't have any, you don't know how to have any teenage boys. I mean, some girls, you could get downright, they will even go so far as seducing boys. And I mean, shamelessly, they call them up and they really come after them, some boys. And boys, you learn how to handle that. And if their mother tells them, it has no impact. Here are some of the lines that girls hand out to boys. I have trouble, monthly cramps. The doctor said sex would help me. Of all the guys I know, you're the one I want to help me with this medical problem. I've been seeing a psychiatrist. He says I'm too inhibited. He advised me to have sex. This is the other side of it. I heard rumors you're a lesbian. This is, I need to know if you're really a man or just a wimp. But you girls hand out lines to boys. They certainly do. Here's what boys need to learn from their father. How to treat a girl with respect. I've already talked about this when I talked about the place of romance in the marriage. Male responsibility in the relationship. Oh, listen, fellas, teach your boys this. That they are responsible. See, the cultural myth is that a boy's got to, because he's a boy, he can push it as far as he can, and if the girl has to say no. And our boys need to learn that the Bible does not teach that fornication is a sin, is a female sin. It's a male sin as much as it's female. And I teach my boys, you take a girl out on a date, you are responsible for her honor, for her integrity, regardless of what she does, you are responsible. And a boy needs to know from his daddy that he doesn't have the right to go off to get all he can and expect her to say no. He's got any morals about it. Understand? It's the boy's responsibility. No. That's just, you know, you didn't say it in a positive way, but pointedly. Boys need to learn from their father the dangers involved in going steady. There are dangers, especially in going steady. And you realize that, you know, you say to a guy, look, you're a healthy guy, all your glands work. She's a beautiful girl, she's a nice girl, and when you start going steady, you form this kind of relationship that really makes it hard for you to keep to live straight. It makes it hard for you to put pressure on you. We use that word a lot, put pressure on them. They understand that. You really want this kind of pressure. And it's interesting. The teenagers today are not going steady the way they used to, they did in my day. I think it's smarter. They're hanging loose. They don't want that pressure. They're not smart. They know that, but if they know their parents, you know, you talk about it, you realize what a comfort it is for teenagers to know that their parents know what they're feeling. They just know that mom and dad know what they're feeling. And the boys need to learn male versus female sexual response and how to avoid situations that threaten self-control. Tell your boys, look, be smart now. Don't get yourself in a situation where you're asking for trouble. Play it smart. When do you give sex? That's who. When do you give sex education? Well, first of all, in the pre-pubescent years, as questions arise. What do I mean by that? I think one of the greatest opportunities for sex education for older children is when younger children are born, when mom's pregnant. And you can give some pretty straightforward answers. Daddy plants the seed, and the baby comes in. And they, kids buy this. You don't have to be too clinical, but kids understand. It's a good chance. I remember one time when my oldest boy, before he was about nine, I took him at the Nautilus with me. There were Nautilus up that time up the street to work out, and I wouldn't let him, and he wanted to play on the machines, and I wouldn't let him. So he said, why? And I said, well, honey, you haven't gone through puberty yet, and so you don't, and you're not ready to lift weights. Well, on the way home, he pursued this with me. What was puberty? And I said, well, honey, when you go get to a certain age, and I told him, you get to about 11, 12, it's going to happen, your body's going to start changing. And these things called hormones are going to flow, and you'll start growing hair in different parts of your body, and then you can't make muscles until you can lift weights. It's just not good for you. When the hormones start to flow and you start becoming a man, then you can lift weights and it won't hurt you. And so, you know, we're just walking down the street, going home, and I'm telling him all this, and he's listening, he takes it all in. You know, he bought that. The trouble was, he had this new intonation. He just couldn't wait to work into the conversation to show his older sister that he knew what puberty was. And I'd give $100 if I could remember the context. And about two evenings later, we're having supper, and he worked the word puberty into the conversation where it did not fit. And we all fell off our chairs. But he really knows, but he knew. He knew that when someone began to happen, he wasn't surprised by it. But then later on, you give him, with the onset of puberty, that's when they need the whole story. So in the prepubescent years, as questions arise, don't tell them too much. Tell them what they want to know. And secondly, the onset of puberty, they need to know. How do you tell them? First of all, choose a good time and a place. Be positive rather than negative. Don't go in the room, pull down the shades, lower your voice, and say, honey, I'm going to warn you about something. Yeah. About SEX. Be relaxed and unemotional. I remember the first go off first off. Be direct, tell it straight. Do not preach, emphasize what is smart. That's my advice. Do not preach, emphasize what's smart. Now, that's how you tell them. I recall we had a deal. My wife and I had a deal that we just answered questions as they came up. When the kids got old enough to get into puberty, when they needed to have the big talk, we called it. The kids called it the talk. That I have with the talk. But the girl, that she would talk to the girls and I would talk to the boys. That's not necessarily the only way it could be done. That's just the way we worked it out, which was great because our daughters were born first. Then it came time for when the boys came along. It got to be my turn. And speechlessly, I took Aaron with me on a trip, a speaking tour, as I often did, speaking trip. So I got him in the car going down the highway at 55 miles an hour, you know. I thought, this would be a good place because you're stuck there, you know, you can't get out. I wasn't worried about him getting out, it was me. I was worried about getting, you know, anyway. And interesting, we got to tell him, it took about 2 hours. And when I got into it, but I was nervous. He wasn't. He was cool as a cucumber. And then I grew up again. But I believe in telling it all. That is, they need to know it all. Why? Well, first of all, they're going to hear it all anyway. You cannot choose that they don't know it all. What I mean by all? Well, you teach the boys how. Make sure they understand how a woman's body works. They see these advertisements all the time on television for feminine hygiene products. They need to know about a woman's period. They need to know exactly what's going on. Make sure they know that. Why? Boy, make sure they know about their own body and the physical changes that take place and when they're stimulated, what happens. Make sure they know about homosexuality. Male and female, they need to know this. What is a gay? What do they do? Listen, they need to know this. And tell them what the words mean. See, they're hearing all this stuff, and they're seeing these. And often, they kids were using sexually oriented words. They don't know what they mean. I recall, this, you may not agree with this, but you think about it anyway. I believe you ought to tell them what the dirty words mean. We assume they know what they mean. They don't necessarily know what the dirty words mean. And tell them the dirty words, and then you tell them the words you're supposed to use. I recall, and I told my boys, both of them, when I said, now here's the words you're going to hear about, you know, for this, and not just the four-letter words. And I just told them, I explained what the dirty words meant. And they were shocked. That's about the only time they got shook up. They were shocked that I knew those words. They'd never heard me use them. And somehow, they just in the back of their mind, they figured I didn't, you know, here's my father can read six languages, but he can't translate the restroom wall down to Sunoco Station. So somehow, it was a real, and they never heard me use them before, they haven't heard me use it since, but it was a real comfort to them, and they found out that I did know those words. And I said, now this is the word you heard, and that's what we don't hear, but this is the correct word. And tell it all, it took a long time. Yeah, they said, look, we don't use that word. Yeah, but tell it on, as I say in the syllabus, do not labor under the illusion that they will not learn about the less attractive aspects of human sexuality. The child will hear from someone better from you. What they don't know can hurt them. Tell them about birth control. Tell them what a condom is, how it functions. Tell them about the pill, how it works. They really need to know this. Now what it will do, it's interesting. What it does, let me tell you this. It really builds closeness. You see, sex is the big hit. It's the big issue today. What are most jokes about in high school? Sex. What are most songs about? Sex. What are kids thinking about and worrying about? Sex. Now listen to me. If you cannot communicate with your child about sex, then you really cannot communicate with your child at all. Your communication is very superficial. The other side of that is, if you open the door of communication on that subject, you will find you have created a general openness of communication. That if you can talk to your kids about that, they really create, you understand, because it plays such a central role in their thinking. And it is central to our humanity. Our sexuality is fundamental to our humanity. And if you can communicate about that, then it creates openness for other things, which are less fundamental. I recall what Aaron said when he came back home. Often a boy will do, if he wants to send messages to his father, sometimes he'll send them to his mother. And he said to mom, to his mother, he said, mom, he said, you know, I'm glad now. I think if anything came up, I could go to dad now and ask him. I opened the door. He was glad it was open. He said, I think I could go to him and ask him anything. It really opens, it really creates closeness. Because that is so fundamental to him, such a basic thing to him. And then later on, you can make reference to this, to these conversations. You just talk about it. And what it does, it removes the nervousness and the hypersensitivity, and you can just deal with it. What do you tell them? Emphasize the long view of sex. Tell kids what's smart. What do you say to a kid? Kids, sex is a dangerous thing. No, you say, look, I start out my conversation with my boys, and I said, be positive. I said, look, Aaron, I want to tell you about sex. First thing I want to tell you is that God created it, and I think it's one of the best ideas that he ever had. And what's more, I'm for it, and I'm pretty good at it. Well, I told him. He's sitting there going, no. Yeah, positive. I'm going to tell you, this is a great thing. I'm going to tell you how not to ruin it. I'm going to tell you, God created it. If you do it God's way, it's going to be great for you. If you mess it up, you'll be sorry all your life. Take the long view. So, I'm going to give an example. I said to both of my boys, I said, you know, when I told you about puberty? Yeah, I did. How are you going to start growing hair? You never did it before? I said, you're going to start growing a beard. Yeah, that can be. I said, that's fun. I said, now, I told both of them, Aaron and Adam, I said, one of these days you're going to start shaving. Once every 6 months at first, and then once a month, then you'll be down to once a week. And I said, before you know it, you're going to be shaving every day. You know what that means? That means that once a day, at least once a day, you're going to look yourself in the face. Look yourself right in the eye, unless you want to cut your nose off. That means you'll have to face yourself at least once a day in the mirror. And how you live the next, how you conduct yourself the next 4 or 5 years will determine whether or not you spend the rest of your life shaving a gentleman or shaving a jerk. If you want to spend the rest of your life shaving a loser, you just mess it up now. A long view. And listen, kids will buy that. You know, I'm going to teach you how to handle sex now so that when you get married, it will be all that God intends for it to be. Kids need to know that sex is not the be-all and end-all. The youth, the teenage culture says to kids that sex is the ultimate experience, and they need to know it isn't. But it can be great. This is how you, this is what you do. God made it for marriage. So tell them why. You understand? Be positive. Give them a long view. I like the great story that Charlie Shedd tells about the guy back in the days when Fort Lauderdale was the center of the beach, the spring break, and this evangelistic team went down. This one guy, one kid met a guy coming at the beach, had these special made t-shirts and had on it, help stamp out virginity. Yeah, that's awful. You know, what are you going to say to this big football type, help stamp out virginity? And the guy said to him, I told my boy this story. And I said to him, oh, that's a neat shirt. He said, thank you. No, it's really unusual. That's a great shirt. That's really unusual. Yeah, how did it make? He said, in fact, he said, that's such an unusual shirt. I think you ought to, when you get home tonight, you ought to wash it and put it away in a plastic bag and save it. Said, why would I want to do that? He said, well, you're probably going to get married in 2 or 3 years, aren't you? Yeah. He said, chances are you're going to have a little girl who's going to be the apple of your eye. You're going to love that little girl, and she's going to call you daddy, and she's going to own your heart. And one of the biggest days in your life is the day that she has her first date. And when that nervous young man shows up to take her on her first date, you can go get the shirt and give it to him. you take the long view. Listen, kids, you understand? Kids will buy this. You don't make sermons out of it. You say, look, you handle this right now and you'll be glad the rest of your life. What do kids need to listen to? Kids need to know this. You have sex with somebody, you carry that person with you the rest of your life. It makes no difference whether you're forgiven or not. They go with you. You never, ever leave them behind. You need to know this. Emphasize the spiritual foundation of sexuality. God made sex to express a spiritual issue. We've talked about that before. Teach that happiness in sex is reserved for those who obey God. Teach that sex is an expression of love, not a substitute for it. Explain the myths surrounding recreational, casual sex. Tell them that Playboy sex is a myth. That's the worst sex in the world. It's the least satisfying. Explain what pornography is and how pornography grows out of treating sex as if it were simply physical. That's what it is, you know. You see, pornography is based upon the assumption that sex is a physical act, that and nothing else. If you teach our kids that if you treat sex as a physical act, that and nothing else, just recreation, then it's not going to be satisfying. And you're going to think it's not satisfying because I didn't do it right. And you're going to, then you start buying the books to see how to do it right. And then it doesn't work. It's not satisfying. And then you try the hard stuff, and it becomes perverse. And you get it. And you realize how many homosexuals or heterosexuals who ran their string out with the opposite sex, and so they're going to try it with their own sex, still working from the assumption that sex is a physical thing, that and nothing else. And if you just find the right way to handle it physically, it will be satisfying, and it never works. Teach your kids that sex is primarily spiritual, but secondarily physical. And when sex is satisfying only insofar as it expresses a spiritual relationship. Tell them that. They need to know that. Teach them that the teen years are not time out. Our kids are taught this. Somehow these years don't count. A lot of our kids think this way. Get to be 13, time out. Then you're going to be a different kind of person, follow different rules, do things you would never do later on. When you get to be 19 or 20 or 21, then it's time back in. Now real life begins. And I teach my teenagers that the years between 13 and 19 are the most important 5 or 6 years of your life. They affect your life more than any other 5 or 6 year period in your whole life. They're far from being time out. It's time in, time in, time in. If there's ever a time out, it's not then. A lot of kids think the rules don't apply. You realize how many of our church kids think that way? I'm a teenager now. It's time out. I'll fiddle around, do all kinds of stuff. When I get to be an adult, get married, then it's time back in, and then we'll get down. I'll be what I really am. And it doesn't work. You need to know that. Tell the truth. Homosexuality is not a legitimate third sex, not a minority. It's a matter of morals, not genetics. The gay world is anything but gay. That's the one thing they are not. The gay world is a desolate bunch. Teach the facts on socially transmitted diseases. Understand? Tell them what gonorrhea and syphilis and all these things are. They need to know that. Why they are socially STDs. Now, if you don't know how to do this, you may want to train yourself. Buy some books. Make sure you know what you're going to say. Think it through ahead of time. But hear me. They need to hear it from mom and dad. And they need to hear it all. And they need to hear it early. And they need to hear it straight. And they need to hear it from God's point of view. Oh, I think so. Oh, yeah, if he knows that you know them, but don't use them. It's interesting. Teenagers have this strange mentality. They think their parents aren't really tuned in. They don't really know these things. They may admit, of course, some things, some parents don't. They're just oblivious. But if they know you know, they're not trying to fool you. And they won't try to bluff you. And you can just talk about it. Then later on, you can say to a kid, you like this girl? Yeah. I'm not making this up. This is real life. You like this girl? She said, boy, she's a nice girl. She said, yeah. Well, you know how things work, don't you? Remember I told you? Yeah. Okay. Play cool. Play smart. See, if they go out that door knowing that you are thinking, that you understand what they're up against, you know, and you don't treat them like they're some kind of moral leper. You don't say, let's pray and sing a hymn and see if we can keep you out of hell. What you say is, look, Aaron, Adam, Angeles, that's a nice girl in the air, yeah. I think she's a nice girl too. And you think a lot. You really like her, don't you? Yeah. Well, you know what that can lead to if you're not careful. Without even thinking about it. Yeah. You know, my point is, if they know that you are thinking about it, if they know that while you're on their date, that you're aware and you're thinking about the very problem that they're facing, not because they're evil kids, but because they're just teenagers, just because the way God made us, it gives them a point of reference. It's an encouragement to them. But you realize, many teenagers, they feel like when they leave that door and get in their car and drive out of that driveway, they enter a different world. It's like going to another planet. And their parents simply, what their parents think or don't think or don't know, simply does not count. And many kids cultivate that. And we started early. I think I told you, my wife taught me this. She built a conscience in them when they were little. Her rule is, if you grow up and do it, you may do it. I can't stop you, but I'm going to see to it that you don't enjoy it. Well, what I'm saying is that when these kids drive out that door, they know that their parents go with them. They need that help. You understand that I'm not leaving my parents' world. My parents are very much a part of this world, this universe. You understand what I'm talking about? Teenagers try to, and they're led to, create their own universe. We got our own music, got our own vocabulary, got our own dress, got our own friends. But you see, that's Satan has created that. I don't buy it. Any questions on that? Well, I've spoken in generalities, but these are the basic principles, and I've tried to give some examples. And you need to do it. I grew up on the farm. I grew up under that myth is farm kids get their sex education naturally. Ever heard that one? That's what I was always taught. Because they watched the animals. Well, I grew up when I watched animals, and I saw what they were doing, and I had the foggiest notion what I was looking at. And then, they just assume you know this. And don't assume your kids know it. Or you can say this, look kid, I know that you already know a lot of this stuff, but I want you to hear it from your old man. Even though you know about it, you need to hear it from me. Okay. Any questions on that? Any comments? You want to agree or disagree? Think it's too explicit? Let me say this to you. I think, remember I said I like teenagers? I think teenagers are great. And I think most teenagers will do what's right if you give them half a chance. But you've got to give them somewhere to plant their foot. Understand? They got to have something solid they can start, where they can start. Not just out there and make it up as they go along.
Application in ministry, but what are a situation that everyone has a good turnout? Where you have a kid, guy or girl, that they can go to them and want to know some of this stuff. Because mom and dad won't tell them. And you try to talk to mom and dad, or you get the senior, however you work it out, and try to get the word to mom and dad, but they need you. Because mom and dad said, oh no, they don't need that. Then where do we go?
You cannot do it.
Just leave it alone?
Leave it alone.
What about calling the school, talking to the school counselor or something like that? Kids counselor?
No, we need to be careful. It's very frustrating, I know. But the point is, we get on the public school system when they try to act like our kids aren't ours. We can't do it with somebody else. It's the temptation is there, the frustration is there.
You got kids in youth group that are experimenting or on the verge of it because they just, in some cases, they're junior high school, they know what's going on, and yet they probably don't have many details, and you just have to leave them alone. Treat it in a group session and leave it.
But you can only treat it so much in a group session. Yeah. If you tell kids in a group session, a class, or youth meeting, what their parents don't want them to know, you're asking for real trouble. And you don't have a right to do that. So you'd be very delicate. I know we got Angela, when she was a youth director at Winter Park, she got in trouble because she told some kids about abortion. And kids should have known, but there were a couple of parents that thought that, of course, their kids already knew about it, but they didn't. They thought they shouldn't talk about things like that. She got criticized for it. And I think she was unwise. She understood that maybe, although she announced what they were going to talk about, that when they actually go home and tell what they were told, because she really talked about it. So it's very hard. It takes a lot of diplomacy. But my basic principle: you don't start in with the assumption, if they need to know, I'll tell them no matter what their parents want. You can't do that. We wouldn't want somebody to do it with our kids on some other subject.
What if they ask questions and they're in a position where they don't know what they're doing and their parents aren't doing what they need? And I can't see if the kid came to me and wanted the answer and they were desperate and I knew that they didn't get to me, no matter what they did say. I couldn't be silent no matter what was happening.
But you owe the parents the courtesy of saying, telling them what they ask you.
They don't give them an answer if they ask you a question?
No, I didn't say don't give them an answer. I'll check with the parents first. If it's very specific stuff, and they say, that they've asked me this, do you want me to tell them? Depends on what it is. Some stuff is pretty general knowledge. I'm talking about the more specific stuff. And dependent, Laura, on the age of the child. If somebody's 16, 17 years old, tell them, take your chances. I assume you're talking about 9, 10, 11 year olds.
I'm thinking junior high school. I'm talking about kids who have a general street knowledge.
Oh, they get to high school, tell them. I'm talking about. Tell them and take your chances. They already know anyway.
They know, but they don't, you were talking about earlier, they get that street knowledge, but they don't have that Christian attitude.
Yeah, give them to them. They get to be teenagers, I thought you were talking about like 8, those just entering puberty, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's where I'm saying you need to be careful with their.
teenagers already know about it. All you can do is just comment on the information they already have. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? It's the younger children. For instance, I know that I told my children, we told our children, the big talk, a year or two before a lot of other parents would, before they would think it was needed. Well, that's the parent's decision at that age. That's what I'm saying. Yes.
Did you find that once you told, like, LeAngela, that the other kids found out sooner?
I don't know. Not the boys didn't. But what happens is when if you break down the barriers. Now I'm not talking about cheapening it. You know, it can become coarse. Some people think that they have a job, you know, just to make it a common table conversation. They make it coarse, and that's not what I'm talking about. They don't permit that. Like, I have to draw the line on that sometimes to get a little too casual with it. But once you get the barriers down, there should be some barriers there. Our culture and our faith, there are some inhibitions. But when you get the barriers down, that should not be there is what I'm talking about. The unnecessary barriers. When you get those down, what happens is it tends to be talked about in a more natural way. And I think more information is transferred from one child to the next, simply because they realize it's not some deep evil thing, and they talk about it.
Yeah,
right.
I had no idea what he was talking about. But then when Mom sat down with me later, it was kind of like old hat, because I heard it from John, Cindy.
Yeah, because you were coming along with it. Well, nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. As long as you got straight information. What happens is, let me ask a second, Renee. I'll remember your question. I want to say this. Many, the parents, Daryl, the parents often say this, Daryl, referring to your problem. They'll say, well, you don't want to tell them too much too soon. It's very hard to tell a kid too much too soon. Why? They got this little filter system, and if you give them too much information too soon, they just filter out what they don't want and forget it. They don't even hear you most of the time. If they're not interested. Understand? Even if you do tell them too much too soon, it's better to tell them too much too soon than too little too late. If I were going to risk it, I'd risk it on the other way. But often little kids, you know, they have a way of just filing it away, and when they're old enough to ready for it, they take it out and use it. That's information. Renee?
What do you think about the use of a book? Like, I saw, I was in a children's store not too long ago, and they had all kinds of books for children. There were the pictures and everything were illustrated, and it was written for a child. Like, there was one for how to change, and then there was one for teaching, mm-hmm. and then that for life. And it started off saying how there's a lot of myths, you know, a lot of people say the store is for computer, you come out of a little pack or something, you know.
I think it's fine. Maybe the way you want to do it, if you're a little uptight yourself about it, and depending on the subject. But I'd look at the book very carefully to make sure that it said what you wanted to say. Any other questions or comments? This next section, I'm going to just direct your attention to it. Money, servant, or master? Let me just say a couple of things about this. Money. This is a very important item in a family. I wish I'd reserved more time for it. But let me just say this to you, that financial problems are a primary cause of failure in marriage, a primary cause. And I just list here the principles of money management. I'm just going to go over these very quickly, and then we'll quit for today. Here are some basic principles. And this doesn't take a lot of discussion. These are pretty self-explanatory. First, the first principle of money management is God's part first. You believe that? The first check you write is God's check. Secondly, good records. Keep good records. You listen, if you don't keep good records, you can be broke 3 months before you know it. Keep good records. If you're making out your income taxes and it takes you 2 or 3 days to get your records together, you're not keeping good records. Third, divide the responsibilities. Divided responsibilities. That is, it's not right to say, for a woman to say, or a man, and both do it, I'm free to do whatever, spend whatever I want to spend, it's your job to worry about the money. You understand? Some women say it's her husband's. You worry about making it, I'll spend it, it's your problem making it. But some husbands do that to their wives. They'll give their wives the checkbook and the budget responsibilities, and then they are careless and let the wife worry about it. You understand? It is, you share in this. No matter who handles the checkbook, you share in this. Fourth, the danger of credit cards. Am I against credit cards? No, I use credit cards. Just be aware of the dangers of credit cards, especially when you're on a limited income. The less money you make, the more dangerous a credit card is. Why? If you don't have the money today, you will not have it tomorrow. Secondly, the special danger of those to those who live close to the line. If you live close to the line and you got a credit card, that purchase which you would have got by without, often you'll go ahead and make that purchase if you have a credit card. That's the danger of it. It takes great discipline to handle credit cards. Credit cards should be for convenience only. Ideally, you should pay off a balance each month. And credit cards, as you know, carry the highest interest among vehicles of consumer credit. You pay more interest on a credit card than any other kind of loan. So the danger of credit cards. Now, credit cards, on the other hand, are for as a convenience, as a safety backup, but they are very, very dangerous, especially to those of limited income, especially to young couples starting out. Well, a few more basic rules in money management. First of all, develop a realistic budget and stick to it. And that's very hard to do. But you need to know how much is coming in and how much is going out. Avoid impulse buying. Take time to think it over before you make a significant purchase. A good rule is sleep on it, especially if it's an important purchase. What looks so important one day is not so important the next. Distinguish between needs and wants, and that takes a lot of wisdom. It's amazing how what we want will suddenly look like what we need if we think about it hard enough. But if we keep on thinking, maybe we can realize that we don't really need it, we just want it. The wisdom of saving. It is better to earn interest than to pay interest. It is efficient. You can shop better. You can take advantage of opportunities if you have cash on hand. Often you can take advantage of bargains. And it's better to save than to pay, make payments. Borrow wisely. The basic rule is it is counterproductive to borrow money to buy anything that does not appreciate in value. Of course, that means most homes appreciate in value. It's generally considered, in most cases at least, to be that it's wiser to buy a home than to rent it, simply because a home, generally speaking, will appreciate in value. Of course, the number one item that most people buy and have to buy is an automobile, and that's the most counterproductive purchase you ever make. That is, it costs a great deal and it depreciates very quickly. And ideally, we should buy our automobiles with cash, but some can't, most can't. But the worst dollar you ever spend is the dollar you spend on a car. But when buying furniture or anything else that depreciates in value, the rule is to save and pay for it. Should not borrow money for that which depreciates in value. Next, carry enough insurance, but not too much. Don't carry too much insurance, and do not carry the wrong kind. And I'm not going to presume to give advice on different kinds of insurance, but need to take good advice. Provide for retirement. It's not smart, in my opinion, to depend on Social Security to be your complete retirement for a number of reasons. It's not enough, for one thing, and secondly, there are very few guarantees that will be there, at least in the present shape or in the present form. And in most cases, it's better to buy housing than to rent, for reasons I've talked about above.
Well, the last consideration of the Christian family life, the last thing to talk about is the question of when trouble comes. What do you do when trouble comes? We've spent a great deal of time talking about how to make it work. Well, what happens when it doesn't work? Well, Charlie Shedd lists 7 rules for a good, clean fight, and arguments, or what is commonly called fights, do take place. Here are his rules for a good, clean fight. Agree that the time is right. Agree that your aim is understanding, not revenge. Check your weapons. Don't overkill. Don't make it bigger than it really is, in other words. Lower your voice a notch or two instead of raising it a notch or two. The thing always sounds worse when you shout it. Never argue or reveal points of disagreement in public. One of the worst, cheapest, tackiest things you can do is argue in public. And when you can't agree, call an armistice. Have a ceasefire. Say, well, look, we can't agree on this. Let's just call it off, at least for the time being. When you do come to terms, discuss it no further except by mutual agreement. That is, don't keep bringing it up. Well, should we see a counselor? Well, I think sometimes a counselor is exactly what is called for. Often the wife is ready to go to a counselor much earlier than a husband is. I mentioned this before. Men are more arrogant. Men find it harder to go to counselors for advice. But here are the 4 rules governing seeing a counselor. Number 1, make sure your counselor is both qualified and that he or she is operating from the Christian point of view. Don't go to a counselor who says, well, what you really need to make your marriage stronger is an affair or something like that. That is often the kind of thing goes on. Many counselors are people with problems of their own. Make sure you get a good counselor who operates from a Christian point of view. 2, be honest with your counselor. It doesn't make any sense to pay money to see a counselor and spend time if you're not going to tell him the truth. It's a big waste. 3, do not use the counseling session as a club against your mate. And I've done a little bit of counseling, enough to know that is often done. That is, they come to the counselor and let me word it this way: don't go to a counselor and then use the counselor as a weapon. Don't go to the counselor and say, now you tell my wife here what I've been trying to tell her, and she won't listen. Maybe she'll listen if you tell her. Well, that's not why you go to a counselor. You must instead seek genuine understanding. 4, be as ready to see your own faults as those of your partner. That's absolutely necessary. If you're not going to do those 4 things, then forget about seeing a counselor. But last of all, we talk about when trouble comes, living with imperfection. All problems cannot be solved, nor all issues resolved. Few mates become absolutely compatible. Every marriage suffers points of tension, and forgiveness will always be in order. The unrelieved determination to change the unchangeable will destroy a marriage. So sometimes you have to just learn to live with it. Well, this ends the Christian Family Life series. We've talked about the basic principles, theology of the family, something about the history of the family. We've looked at it from the viewpoint of anthropology, and we've spent the last few weeks talking about practical ways to make these principles work, the wit and the wisdom and the skills needed to have a successful family. May God bless your family.